Hi, everyone, and welcome to this session on media professionals, our panel of media professionals here that work on impactful coverage of GCRs. To introduce our panelists today, we have Clara Collier next to me. Clara is the editor-in-chief of Asterisk, which is a quarterly magazine featuring clear writing and clear thinking about the world's most complicated problems. We have Kelsey Piper. Kelsey is a senior writer at Vox's Future Perfect, where she writes about emerging technologies, effective altruism, science, and forecasting. And then on the end, we have Shakil Hashem, who runs the AI Safety Communications Center, also known as AISC, with Alex Lentz. AISC supports organizations and individuals with AI communications, primarily press-related communications, offering strategic advice, media tracking, and writing and pitching press releases and op-eds. So this session does include the opportunity for you all to submit questions for our speakers. We'll start with some questions that I've prepared for some period of time, but I would encourage you to submit your questions as soon as you have them so we can integrate them into the conversation. And there will be office hours after this talk in Junior Ballroom 4 right after this session. So you'll also have the chance to more casually talk with our speakers if you'd like. So I thought we'd start the conversation by introducing people to your work a little bit for people that don't know about your work. And I'm curious about the theory of change that you all have for why you work in media and how you how you got started in that, how you're thinking about impact right now. Yeah, anybody who wants to jump.
I'll start with you. I'm okay, you should go. We'll start with you.
So I am a defected journalist. I was a journalist for a while because I was very interested in explaining things to the world. I think there are lots of things where people just lack the information that they need to really know what to do or how to act. But then a couple of years ago, I moved over to the comm side, where the theory is almost a level higher than that of trying to help lots of journalists understand what's going on in various topics, because there are lots of groups who are constantly trying to persuade journalists. If journalists only listen to those people, they'll get a very one-sided view of what's going on. And I think through comms work and behind the scenes support for people and organizations who work on this stuff, you can help journalists get a more accurate picture of what's going on in the world. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think probably my sense is that both of you share like the sense of wanting an accurate understanding in the world through your work.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Kelsey. I've been at Future Perfect at Vox for 6 years. I think the idea behind Future Perfect was that there is not a lot of opportunity if you work in a mainstream news outlet to write about what you think is the most important thing instead of what is in the news already. And the idea was that Future Perfect would, by being grant-funded instead of advertiser-funded, and by being sort of an EA-oriented lens on the world, be able to write about whatever we thought mattered the most, sort of whether or not the normal incentives of journalism produced that. I felt pretty good about, like, we had a lot of pandemic coverage, and then the pandemic hit, and we had a lot of AI coverage, and then in the last couple of years, I think a lot of people have sort of swung towards AI. But that does put us in a weird place now, right? Because if the idea was these things are undercovered in mainstream journalism and then these things took over the world, yeah, I actually don't have a good answer to what my theory of change is now.
And Asterisk came out of, Kelsey might actually be able to speak to this better than I could, because we were both talking about it in the early stages and she eventually convinced me that I should do it. But I was dissatisfied that this would have been, what, 2 years, year and a half ago, with the state of a lot of EA communication with the outside world. I felt there was a lot of material that was very much geared at highly involved EAs who were familiar with a lot of concepts, who knew a lot of jargon, or material that was very evangelical, that was geared at getting people to develop a worldview and like get them when they're 22 and they move to Berkeley and start working in AI safety. And I think there is like a real place for this material. And at the same time, there was a sort of missing middle of communication that just presents the ideas a la carte, that says, we think this is important, we think this makes sense, and we think that a lot of people in the world who work in government, who work in think tanks, who work in media, academics, various people, would benefit from trying to understand this, from having more tools to think through this, without it necessarily being attached to accepting a whole philosophical and cultural complex. And at the same time, there's a lot of material, things people work on that EAs often don't read, because we can be an insular bunch. And I wanted to include some of that too, and have the publication really be a bridge between those worlds.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think all of you are sort of putting at this dynamic of trying to translate a lot of maybe technical work or like nuanced work from the EA space to audiences that are external. And I'm curious if there's any particular like pain points or frustrations or challenges in that particular act of translation.
So one thing I run into a ton with AI is that you're always trying to make very fine distinctions between things that sound almost identical but have like very different implications for what we should do. And this is like a communications challenge, but it's also like a conceptual clarity challenge. Like, I think a lot of people don't communicate clearly about this because they aren't like differentiating this clearly. So you've got these very adjacent concepts that people are confused about, where slight differences in what's actually going on have like vastly different policy implications. And because there's so much we don't know, and there's so much people disagree on, and there's so much we're confused on, I also don't want to like try and give the public like a nice slick like, here's what's actually going on. Like, you can say, here is like some concerns that people have, but then you run into something where people have concerns about everything, and you don't want to write articles about something that you think is one of the most serious risks affecting our world today that read kind of like, scientists think there might be microplastics in the lettuce, where there might be, but nobody thinks this is one of the most important problems of all time. I think those are the challenges I sort of end up dancing around on the most.
Something related to that that I think about a lot is it's very hard to communicate uncertainty without downplaying the thing that you're talking about. Like, in particular, I think that a lot of people working in AI safety and a lot of people adjacent to AI safety, including myself, are like not remotely confident that we are all going to die because of computers, and have like wildly varying opinions on how likely AIX risk is, on how it could come about, on what we should expect to see in the interim. And it's quite hard to, if you believe, as I do, that this is a serious concern that people should really be thinking about and trying to deal with, to communicate that point while also being like honest about, and also, this might not be what a normal person would think of as very likely. And we don't know how likely it is, and we don't know what it's going to look like, and different smart people have extremely different opinions on all of these questions.
We ran into that problem recently where we helped AI Impacts with the press coverage of their new survey, which found a, I think, median view among experts of 5% chance of extinction. Mm-hmm. And one news outlet picked that up with the headline of, like, there's no need to worry about AI. Experts think there's only a 5% chance of extinction. Yeah. I was like, 5%'s a lot. Be worried.
As I wrote in an Asterisk magazine last year, like, if a plane that you were flying on had a 5% chance of crashing and killing everyone on board, you would not board that plane. And that plane is the human race. So, like,
I think, okay, that's the obvious concern, and that does come up a lot. And I kind of want to push further, because I feel that when I'm, like, commissioning AI material or editing AI material, there's a very natural tendency for people to want to go in the opposite direction and emphasize, like, no, seriously, small chance of a very bad harm is very, very bad. And I agree with this, but I think it can also lead us to not interrogate our own doubts about, like, what is our P doom? Does this new material maybe challenge our belief in some level of X risk? I think, like, it is a two-way street, and it can also be hard for people who are coming from this community and who do think this is a serious problem to really interrogate ourselves about challenges to our belief system, because it can be it can we can feel very embattled trying to make this particular point.
I think there's like a related to that. If you're a communicator, you want to like sound to people like you know what the fuck you're talking about. and that can make it kind of hard to hold the uncertainty that I think is the only intellectual honest stance on many different questions. I think often the way you should feel should be like, I have some object level things I'm confused about. I have some high level things I'm confused about which people to listen to. I have some like disagreements I feel really unsatisfied with. I have some vague like philosophical uncertainties. I, you know, wake up one day and I'm just kind of like, I'm not satisfied with that argument that I've been like accepting for the last 3 years. That is like normal, healthy intellectual process. And I think communicators are sometimes like pressured away from expressing it or pressured away from doing it, or just kind of end up like feeling like, well, I can either do my job of like making people aware of this problem, or I can like be intellectually honest. And that seems like a really, really dangerous road to go down. Like, I think you can't do your job well if you're not intellectually honest, even though it is certainly much harder to talk about deep, confusing, uncertain things and hold the fact that you don't actually know everything you wish you did about them.
I've been noticing this a ton in AI advocacy stuff now, where especially in like public advocacy, there is a constant pressure to say like the sensational thing, because like especially both social media and the mainstream media reward sensationalism and drama and stuff. And so there's like this pressure for everyone to say really insane, extreme things that they might not believe, and I think often don't believe, because that's what you get rewarded for. And there's the like internal justification of, okay, well, at least it's making people pay attention. But yeah, I don't know, that makes me nervous. Yeah.
Are there practical ways that you all feel like you try and juggle that line of like wanting to communicate in a concise way, in a strong way, while also indicating or flagging some uncertainty? Are there like more concrete approaches that you have when you're working on your own projects?
I feel like my last 5 AI articles have all been like, AI experts are at odds over this question. And that's like the one formula that you can use to sort of introduce. And often the experts who are at odds are like at odds with themselves. Like if I got these people in a room, they would have like a lot of what ends up coming across as disagreement is like uncertainty and then different emphases within that uncertainty. But that way you can at least like get people to like engage with a range of views and a range of possibilities without it like sounding like we're oblivious. It sounds like here's like a set of views and people who have those views talking with each other and sort of in conversation. It seems to work moderately well. But the other thing I had to do was stop looking at page view numbers, because the articles that performed by far the best were the ones that were more bombastic and more confident. And the articles that I think did the best job of expressing complex disagreements, like they do get seen by many fewer people.
Interesting. One thing I do just for myself is I have a long running document of all of my doubts about the case for AI doom, and I add to it whenever I have a new one. And like I go back sometimes and look at like, oh, what did I think about this question in like late 2019? And do I still think that? And does this objection still seem good to me? And just as a personal practice, I find this really helpful. Mm-hmm. In terms of coverage, I really like talking about concrete things as much as I can. So I'm thinking, we had an AI issue this past summer, and a lot of it was like, okay, what can I say about hardware, or what can like I get people who are smarter and know more than me to say about hardware bottlenecks? What can we say about regulation? What can we say about like AI development in China? What can we say about, what was in that issue? We did a debate that was actually maybe my favorite piece between someone, Matt Clancy of OpenPhil, who was arguing that AI would not lead to explosive economic growth, and Tame Besaroglu at Epoch, who was arguing that it would. I think talking about like very concrete specific sub areas can be helpful, because it often does not require you to make a bombastic statement about the whole scope of AI safety and can still express something very important and relevant to that debate. Also, like, if you can arrange to do things that are conversational, that are like a point counterpoint or a debate, or things that just bring in multiple voices, as Kelsey said, I think that can be very helpful.
Yeah. So I think along with this challenge, it sounds like, how do you balance different expectations from different audiences and different approaches to communicating in general? I know some of you have noted that another challenge in its own way has been the level of hype and the level of attention around AI coverage in particular. And so I'm curious for whether, what your takes are on whether that level of attention has been particularly helpful in trying to communicate these risks when previously there wasn't as much attention on it, but also what challenges you feel like that brings to communicating well.
With both AI and bio, I feel like the conversations that it was possible to start as a journalist and like the engagement with readers it was possible to have before they became big flashpoint issues was just much better than now. Like if in 2019 you wrote about the potential for a pandemic and what we should do about it, for one thing, not very many other people were writing about it. So your readers mostly weren't coming in with misconceptions. You were mostly like starting with people who would bothered to click on it and didn't know a lot about it. Whereas now you will be taken as pushing a specific political agenda, and you will be taken as taking a side on, you know, the origins of COVID and issues like that. And there's a thing that Matt Iglesias likes to say about how often the way for Congress to get things done is for journalists to have not said anything about it, because then there's like all these compromises that are possible. And once the thing is a flashpoint, then everybody feels like they have to retreat to their side and they worry about the coverage they'll get for their decisions. And it's been kind of painful with like pandemic stuff to watch how, like, a lot of people seem baffled. They're like, how did less get done after millions of people died? But the answer is that once something is a flashpoint, less gets done. Not that much was getting done beforehand either, but at least certainly more doesn't get done. And same thing with AI, where, you know, if you used to write about AI, people hadn't thought much about AI. You might be the first person to show them what modern AI systems were capable of and present them with a range of views on where that was going to take us. And now you see a lot of people who have, like, tribal affiliations, like I'm pro-progress, so I have these set of views about AI, or I'm, you know, hang out with these people on Twitter, so I have this set of views about AI. And it's a much less healthy, like, environment to get actual stuff done. I have no idea what to do about this. Like, it seems bad.
I think I disagree. I think, like, I think I'm remembering this right, that Sam Altman said that releasing ChatGPT the way they did was partly an attempt to like show people what AI is capable of, get people worried and like accustomed to how fast things might move, and like start waking people up to the risks. I don't know if that's true, but I do think it is working. Like, I think all the AI safety progress we've seen in the last year, and I think there's been a ton, like the executive order, the UK safety summit, like increasing consensus among scientists and people like Benju and Hinton and whoever, saying they agree that existential risks are serious. I don't think that happens without all the AI hype and that we got in the spring of last year. Mm-hmm. Like in particular, I don't think that case safe AI statement, the one comparing AI to nuclear weapons and pandemics. I don't think that happens without the hype and the attention. I know from my point of view as like a comms person, it's like much easier to get journalists to talk to experts now. Mm. Yeah.
I think you're both right.
No, well, that's boring.
But seriously, like it is... Like, there is more partisanship. People do have more set opinions. Also, there are a lot of important ideas about what we should be doing about AI that, if they are not communicated, nobody will do anything about them. And they need to be out there.
And, like, ultimately, like, every single person on this planet is a stakeholder in how AI and bio go, and trying to like not tell them, you know, for their own good is not really something I'm comfortable with. But I take your point that like it's easier for people who are doing this work to get it into the media, and that there's a bunch of statements happening that wouldn't have otherwise. And maybe this is me not having as much visibility on the policy side, but like I wonder if those statements are like turning into actually useful actions or not, because that's the part where I worry that partisanship like gets in the way.
So I've heard from a bunch of people that the media coverage and like big public actions are having a fair impact, so that the case statement was like very important for catalyzing policymaker interest in DC. Ian Hogarth's Financial Times article around, I think, March last year, I think was like very important for the UK AI safety summit happening because everyone in Downing Street read it and got really freaked out. Mm. Yeah, I think there is like a pretty meaningful feed through effect. Mm. The question, which I am very worried about, is like this year, especially now that the tribalism is becoming more salient and the narrative is like moving increasingly in that direction of like these people versus these people, if now we're going to start seeing the like partisanship that blocks anything from happening.
Maybe
some of this is because like last year it was so early that we hadn't got to the tribalism stage yet.
Yep. There's like a brief window where people hear about it but haven't yet made up their minds, and that is the golden hour in which all productive work can happen. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
It is encouraging me. I guess I write these articles, but it often feels like, are they having any policy impact? And it's really cool to hear that some journalists writing really, really good coverage has driven policy decision making.
This is like a bit of a hobby horse for me. I feel like climate change circa 1972 is a good case study for this, because it was a bunch of researchers who did some projections and freaked out and decided to publicize it. And a lot of stuff happened, and also it became an incredibly partisan issue.
Yeah.
And that partisanship has been holding back work in the field for decades, and has also caused the epistemic commons in that field to be poisoned for a very long time. And at the same time, there have been like great wins and impressive coordination. And I am not enough of an expert on the history of climate advocacy in the United States to have too many immediately intelligent takeaways here, but I think that looking at how people were communicating about this in the like late 60s, early 70s, is quite interesting, both for thinking about the range of what can go wrong and the range of what can be accomplished in a partisan media environment.
It does kind of make me relax somewhat my ugh, I wish things didn't get big stance a little, because it's hard to imagine that it would have been better for climate if people had never become deeply invested in it. I guess maybe, like, if you had a small group of nerds that was just working on like solar panel subsidies, then it feels
implausible. Like, the problem is there's too many actors who have to, and it's the same with AI. There's just too many people who would have to act against their financial interests.
Do you all feel like this is an argument against previous EA concerns about info hazards, or whether communicating more about AI safety also increases the risks around AI capabilities? Does that tie in here for you?
I think it's like similar to what you were just saying. If there's there's like a window where the rest of the world isn't really paying attention, and so like the secret Congress thing works, but a point hits where like it's too late, it's become mainstream, like ChatGPT, no matter what we did, was always going to be a huge sensation. Everyone was going to be talking about AI.
Mm-hmm.
So once you hit that point, maybe then the info hazards worries go away a bit. I do think this community was maybe a little bit slow to update on like how mainstream it was getting. Like, I think there was a period towards the end of 2022 where things were like trending in this direction, and we could have been a little bit quicker to capitalize on it. But also, we are very distracted with other things.
I think, actually, I'm just going to... Kelsey, do you want to make this point? Because I feel like it is your point about people fighting the last war.
Yeah, so Clara was complaining to me that in the summer of 2023, when she was working on the asterisk AI issue, people were saying, like, are you worried about hype? And you could probably say it better, but her answer was, I think that horses fled the barn and fled the state and, you know.
Living it up in Mexico.
But I do think that, okay, I don't like the info hazards framing. I think the question is, as a communicator who is trying to achieve policy outcomes, is mass communication your best lever for achieving policy outcomes? I tend to think of, like, is this information that, like, instructions on building a bomb and therefore shouldn't be on Wikipedia? It should be like a separate sort of category of thinking. Like, I would prefer that we not
publish detailed instructions on how to make smallpox on Wikipedia. I think of that as like a totally different sort of set of considerations from if you work in mass communications and you are trying to achieve like good democratic policymaking surrounding a high stakes issue. Is this best done by writing a lot of Vox articles that are like AI risk explained? Or is this best done by like writing narrow, tedious stuff in think tanks for a smaller audience? Is this best done by releasing ChatGPT? Or is this best done by, like I don't want to think of that as an info hazards question. I want to think of it as like a, what are the best routes to like create a healthy environment for thinking and doing policymaking? But I do think that like in a lot of early efforts to talk about AI risk do seem to have kind of had the effect of like telling a bunch of people like AI like could probably take over the world, and then at least some of those people were like AI could probably take over the world, you know. and so I think there was a reaction which was like a pretty justified reaction, which was like maybe we should like maybe people who think that super powerful AI systems are not that far off if sufficient billions of investment go into it should avoid saying that loudly near the investors with the billions who are like looking for. But I do think that this like update and things sort of happened too late and then lagged too much. And then you have in the summer of 2023, people saying, should your niche magazine like worry about telling people that AI is a big deal? And and it's a bit late for that. And it's trying to solve a problem that's like by that point.
And also like, man, even just taking it as a given that super like the publication of superintelligence sets us on a path that gets us OpenAI, then you have to get into the arguments of like, well, is it better that OpenAI is founded in what year was OpenAI founded again in again? Like 2015-ish? Yeah. Is it better that it's founded in 2015 or 2020? What about overhang? What about this? What about that? This all seems very, very hard to evaluate.
Whenever I get into that specific rabbit hole where you're like, on a very specific narrow theory of change, it is like bad to say stuff about AI because maybe it will like, you know, found these organizations, but maybe it's good that those organizations were founded because maybe if we're going to have this work, it's better if it happens before the hardware gets there. Whenever I get there, I'm kind of like, the nice safe place to retreat to is like a sort of liberal speech-oriented the thing journalists are like generally coming from as a rule, which is like saying true things in a like non-bombastic like manner to people who want to hear about them, generally good. Like I
was just having a conversation. I'm trying to remember with whom. About exactly this. And it's like, how do you figure out what you should be doing at all? And yeah, the answer is just, broadly, I think that people should like know true things.
That's kind of where I end up too, especially on like the theory of change question. I'm like, yeah, I have pretty radical uncertainty about many specific like pathways to impact and stuff. But fundamentally, I believe that if you know, while not necessarily trying to max audience or go viral or like convince as many people as possible, but if you try and tell people who are interested in the topic true important stuff as best as you understand it, then I really expect that the ways that makes the world better are like real and important, and it usually doesn't make the world worse.
That's fair. Yeah, I guess that ties into the question of, is there advice that you have for people from the EA community, people working in GCRs of either approaches or what you wish people were doing differently, how they approach communicating about their work?
I wish people would communicate more and engage with the outside world more. Like, I think a big part of the reason a lot of the media coverage about GCRs and AI safety in particular is the way it is because the people who are going out and having chats with journalists aren't these people by and large. Like, I think journalists can only write about what they hear and represent the views of people who talk to them. And I think loads of people are really, really worried about being adversarially quoted or accidentally saying something that they didn't mean to say. I'm like, those are real concerns. I don't want to downplay them, but people are often not paying enough attention to the benefits of engaging and talking and building relationships with these people who are going to write about you one way or the other. So do you want your side of the story heard or not?
Yeah, I guess as a journalist who's constantly trying to get people to talk with me, I would be excited about that. But yeah, I think a lot of people who are doing pretty in-depth and detailed technical work don't know whether they should talk with the media about it, and they don't know how to pitch it if they do want to talk with the media about it, which I guess is part of what your organization tries and like helps them do. And it can be really valuable to be articulating what you're doing and be building those relationships if your area suddenly does like become a lot bigger, and also like then you have some practice with expressing yourself. And there are absolutely journalists who will, you know, do sort of hit piece stuff or whatever, but especially most like science reporters, like, are people who think science is really cool, and getting to call up scientists every week and make them tell you about what they're doing is like the best job ever. And you publish a paper and you reach out to some journalist whose work you like and say, hey, you should cover my paper, and like it's relevant an important research that answers an interesting question we wanted to know the answer to. I think that's usually should happen a lot more than it does.
And to circle back to what you were saying at the beginning, I think one of the challenges here is that this is a field with a lot of, trying to think of a better way to say this than galaxy brain subtlety, but it really is. And I think there is an actual skill set associated both with communicating about your work if you are an AI safety researcher, and as a journalist, just understanding enough of the technical details to be able to evaluate, like, is this paper as big a deal as it claims that it is? Mm-hmm. What are these, like, or are these techniques that are mainstream in ML academia that are kind of just being repackaged? Or what are major disagreements in the field that would exist about this? Like, not to necessarily be an expert who could do independent research, but just know enough to sniff out how something relates to the field that it's in, and to be able to talk about some of the often like very subtle, fine-grained distinctions it's making that have pretty significant effects on how it's, on what it is for, what it does. So I think that it's often very hard for researchers to figure out what they need to translate to non-technical audiences, like what parts of their work are significant. And I think that a lot of journalists covering AI do not have the technical background to ask the right questions. And this is not just about AI safety. This is like AI coverage in general and tech coverage in general. There is not, like, that bench is not as deep as it should be.
Yeah, and I think this is both an opportunity for people who want to do communications around VCRs, because journalists are really looking for like sources that they can trust that are credible, and who will sort of give it to them straight. There is nothing as valuable as someone who will straight up say to you, like, I hate this paper. It was going to be predictable that I'd hate this paper because me and author of this paper have like a longstanding disagreement about like this area. But separately from that, it's just repackaging these three other papers. You're like, thank you. Because that's the kind of thing that is obvious in the field and is not obvious outside the field. And it can be really like frustrating to experts in the field if as a journalist you get that wrong, but also the like command of the literature you need to not get that wrong is just like a full-time job in itself. And then you have the other full-time job where you have to write articles every week. And like being that person who can sort of explain stuff from an inside perspective is super valuable to journalists. And I think also like often valuable to you if you're a professional in this position, because you don't like the bad media coverage and you want to air all your secret grievances off the record. We like it when you do that.
I think this is also true for AI policy stuff, in that at the moment, I would argue a lot of the narratives going around about the way influence is working and the sides people are on is just completely incorrect. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be great if more AI policy people were talking to journalists and being like, no, no, you've got the like coalitions completely wrong. It's actually like these people being mean to these people.
We tried this. We tried this.
Yeah, I tried to write up a like explanation of like different schools of thought in AI safety. The problem is that those get out of date really fast, and that
I do wonder if part of the issue here is that like literally a lot of journalists live in New York, and from more than 15 feet away, it is very hard to see the difference between EA and EAC and someone who just works at OpenAI and kind of thinks we're both nuts.
Yeah,
it's there is a lot of overlap. I feel like in people in this community, including me, have a certain narcissism of small differences about the different clusters here. And at the same time, the different clusters are important for understanding why people act the way they act. And if you're not on the ground and don't have that sourcing, it's just difficult to talk about.
I do think California being far away from DC is like deeply impactful on policy in a way that's really unfortunate, because like getting tech policy right has been for decades, like not just with AI, mm-hmm. like a really high stakes issue. And the, you know, 6 hours and three time zones makes a huge difference to whether people are moving in remotely the same social circles, whether they are mutually comprehensible to each other, whether they like respect the same qualities and like care about the same thing. I think it's
and we can see the spectacle of like tech CEOs being trotted out in front of Congress and they're just speaking a different language.
Yeah.
So we should move California closer to DC. New DA Congress. Yeah. Okay, California has great weather. DC has terrible weather. This is it. You want to take DC and put it in like Nevada?
Do you also feel like what you were pointing at is there's also, there are maybe, what's the way to say it, people playing by different rules, or that there's maybe different languages or approaches from other kind of competing schools of thought or approaches to interacting with journalists as well? Or is there some sense of like that, yeah, that I think there's a sense of like, you know, effective altruists, people in this space caring a lot about nuance and uncertainty and communicating that. Is there a feeling that that's pushing up against people who maybe take a different approach or have other interests or different interest groups?
I definitely think that's happening. And like the OpenAI board saga, I think, was a good example of this, where what you saw happening was Sam Altman really knows how to play the game. And like he did it expertly. It was like really, really impressive. If he, because he spent years building relationships with journalists, was calling them all up, he was feeding them his side of the story, and they were, in a lot of cases, more or less regurgitating it. And I think the thing that, a problem we're running into now is there is, we are going up against very, very powerful people and companies and interests who know how to play the game, who are very willing to play the game because they don't have many ethical like lines or boundaries. And we, as an ecosystem, are both worse at playing the game and less willing to play the game. And I think that's just going to be a problem.
I do think the saving grace, though, is that a lot of journalists are reflexively and like correctly allergic to power.
I think that's definitely true. I think the thing that's really annoying about the position we're in is we both have a lot of power and are fighting a lot of power. And I think we're actually really bad at talking about the fact that we are mm-hmm. up against and fighting against a bunch of powerful interests. Like, I think we're really bad at talking about how a lot of the things we want to achieve will lose lots of people billions and hundreds of billions of dollars. Mm-hmm.
And like a big element of the OpenAI saga was that many of the people involved had enormous amounts of money on the line. And this was just completely missing for most of the coverage of it.
Yeah.
Although I do actually think in the end, like when the dust settled a bit, definitely like the media line was that the board was incompetent, but it was also that money, the money gorilla won out. Yeah. That like the people who wanted to make billions of dollars off this beat out the people, whether or not this is accurate, I think that we still don't know enough about what happened inside there to really say. But I think the media narrative did settle on there were people who were trying to protect safety at the expense of money, and they lost.
And I think the media narrative settled there in the end, but those like few days in the middle, which yeah. I think were really important.
Were really, they were happened. A very rough for, few days for, in the middle.
I think you may have had a different outcome of the fight if you'd had different sort of communication. And it, again, it, you know, if OpenAI and OpenAI's board, like there is surprisingly little social integration between the most important people in tech and people in DC compared to like other important political constituencies. And I think that affects the communication situation a lot. Like if you kind of already know some people in a subculture, then gesturing at the subculture is like as simple as saying like, yeah, like those people, you know. And if you have more
separation, then you have to do a lot more work to like lay out like who we're talking about, what distinguishes them from other groups, where they're coming from. I've had a lot of conversations with coworkers at Vox where they're trying to make sense of some of these distinctions. I'm like, nope, those people are something else entirely. Yes, those people live in a group house in San Francisco, apparently, but there's a lot of group houses in San Francisco. I've never heard of them.
And like, not to downplay that, but also Meta has an enormous DC lobbying arm, and a lot of these places do.
And Meta has been like, I think that Meta has done very well at depicting all of their AI-related decisions, which are controversial within the field, as like brave, innovative, and also like, generous, when usually the media is like pretty skeptical of Meta. And I think it is justified in being that way.
My biggest beef with the media at the moment is how little scrutiny is being paid attention to Meta. And I don't know, you've got like Meta in articles talking about how terrible AI safety people are because they're opposing all the, like you said, brave, powerful, brave, wonderful decisions Meta are making. And I think like the complete lack of scrutiny on this company that history suggests we should be very, very skeptical of. I found like really surprising, especially given how journalists have spent years writing about how terrible Meta is. It just like seems to be completely passing them by on this.
Yeah, and there's like, they are not even denying like, yes, we are making these things open source because we expect that in the end we will make an enormous amount of money from doing this. And there is very little, scrutiny and attention paid to like, how is this going to work? What are they, do they want people to do with these tools?
Sometimes I just feel like the thing I find myself saying most often and having the hardest time communicating is billions of dollars are being invested in AI on some very specific assumptions about what is technologically possible within a fairly short period of time. And people vary enormously on whether they think that's in fact going to happen. But billions of dollars is being invested on that premise. And if you treat people who aren't sure what's going to happen here the way you treat uncertainty in many other areas, you will end up very confused because in most of those other areas, there are just not bets of the same magnitude being made. And like, it seems weird that you need to tell journalists do less paying attention to what people are saying and looking at where they're spending billions of dollars. But I think they should do a little bit more of that because it's clarifying.
Well, I want to make sure that we have time for some audience questions because there's a lot of good questions and a lot of upvotes on some of these questions. So I want to jump into these. One question, any data points on the best call to action or plugs that have worked in your experience? For example, at the end of a piece, do you try really hard to include an upcoming research program someone should apply to or some similar call to action? What would be a great call to action for GCR communication?
I mean, as a comms person, I'll say that I think it would be pretty weird for journalism to include calls to actions to things. I think that's like not your role and shouldn't be your role. We've done a big problem actually at the moment with AI stuff in particular is the lack of a good call to action because there isn't a ton most people can do at the moment. I think that will probably change, especially as we move towards legislation. There'll be all the usual of like, call your senator, send a letter, tell your friends. And like some of that is useful at the moment. I don't have a great answer.
I think the question embeds a little bit of a premise that like a lot of what media is doing is being the top of a pipeline for people to like get involved. Yeah. And I think I'm very rarely trying to do that and like never with my Vox content. Like if somebody reads that AI is incredibly important or reads that we're not doing anything about pandemic prevention and is like, wow, I'm really worked up about that. I want to go do more. I do hope that like they can click through some of my links and find opportunities to do stuff. But for the most part, I wouldn't want to write with the aim of like getting them into the pipeline. I want to like write things that my It feels like there's sort of an implicit contract or something with the reader, where I'm like, I'm telling you this information. And if I'm telling you this information with an agenda of like recruitment or evangelism or something, it feels like I'm not like living up to what I'm supposed to be doing, which is like reporting, going out there, figuring out what's going on and telling you about it. And maybe this is the same as you were saying, it would feel a little inappropriate for journalists to have a call to action. I think there's sort of a duty to like not blend journalism and evangelism. And I'm not doing evangelism. I'm trying to figure out what's going on and tell people.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add. I agree with all of that.
Interesting. One question here is that some of the most persuasive communication strategies cut out nuance to make a message simpler. This person says, I hate when this is used against positions I believe to be true. How do you decide when to cut out nuance to persuade more effectively?
It's so hard. And it's especially hard in this ecosystem, which for very good reason puts a very high value on honesty and truth-seekingness. I like to think that you can have it both ways, that there are ways of making catchy, persuasive statements that are still nuanced and fully, like, true. I think it is a lot of work. It's really, really hard, but I think it can be done. Yeah.
I do think something that sometimes feels relevant to me is that if you don't care enough about making sense to people and being persuasive to people and meeting people where they're at, the nuance will get stripped out anyway. It will get stripped out by like other channels of communication and other accounts of what's going on. Like sometimes the thing you can best do to give someone an informed and complete understanding of the thing is figuring out how to say something that they will like be able to hear and connect with. And like, it is painful for me to say something less nuanced than I want. And it is always hard when people are telling you something really complicated and you have to like pick one of the many important things that they're saying. But I think there's like, I have seen organizations and people make the mistake of like thinking, well, if all of my public communications are incredibly nuanced and dense, then people will only like, people will have to interact with the nuanced and dense thing. No, they won't. They will interact with a Twitter post that like made up something based on like having overheard something you said at a party. Like
this is kind of a cop-out, but I really like formulations like this is a concerning trend, and there is a lot of reason to take this concern seriously. And in order for us to not be concerned, something would have to, like this trend would have to change. And here are some reasons why one should think seriously about this. Like statements that I do just wholeheartedly endorse and are kind of soundbitey and are an invitation to more nuanced thinking without having to put all of that up front.
There's definitely a thing where like you can start with a vaguer, catchier thing, and then there's like a funnel you go down almost where like you can build on that with the more nuanced stuff. Mm-hmm. You grab people's attention with a very simple thing and then you introduce more nuance.
And usually the top line message I want someone to take away is not freak out now. It's this is worth deeply considering whether you should be freaked out.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah,
I think usually it's a success if what you manage to convey to someone is that there is interesting and important work on a critical topic happening here, and they should try and like make sense of that work. There are interesting problems to work on if they're looking for problems to work on. There are people to talk to if they're looking for people to talk to. There's a lot at stake. Which are all pretty like nuance-free messages, but I don't think they're nuance-free in a dishonest direction. Like, there's a lot at stake is the AI statement I feel the most comfortable making. If people are like, say something true about AI, I'm like, there's a lot at stake.
That's great. Another question here is, who are the marginal readers you'd like to reach, and what readers do you assume you will not reach?
I think we're all going to have different answers to this question, and
I have a pretty specific audience in mind for Asterisk. I have called them the EA penumbra in the past. It is people who are like one step outside of EA, are probably like pretty wonky and quantitative in their thinking, who have maybe had exposure to the term EA, but who are not like, mostly would not consider themselves EAs, although EAs read it, who are often in tech. They are often economists. I didn't actually like do that intentionally. We just do really well among academic economists. It just happens to be the case. I'm a humanities person myself, so this happened. But there's like a pretty specific profile I have in mind that we are targeting. I think this is not like the objective best profile to reach. It just happens to be the demographic that my publication is going for.
I tend to think that like most Vox pieces will be read by a reasonably small number of people who have either happened to be interested in click on it or happened to work in the area. And all you can really hope for is to leave them like a little bit more informed. And if they're curious, like having an idea of what more they could read, both in terms of more of Vox pieces about it and papers that you're trying to bring their attention to and stuff. And then occasionally something will be seen by a million people and you have like very little control over that. And you want to like write things on the assumption that if they reach a broad audience, they will still like be informative and useful to that broad audience. They're not going to end up misleading if they end up big or whatever. But writing for virality, like I think I said earlier, would make me a worse journalist because the stuff that goes the most viral is like the stuff that I feel less good about in terms of accuracy and depth. So I mostly try and ignore my readers aside from like intending to not leave them worse off or more confused.
I think for me, because of where my work is focused now, the people I'm most trying to reach are policymakers. Like the ideal world, everything I touch is read by both Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Like realistically, not gonna happen. But I think like there are big power laws with Comzy stuff where when you reach like the one person who has so much power over this decision, that counts for like so much more than everything else. And so it's like constantly striving to reach those people. Yeah.
Interesting. A different question. What kinds of projects or work would you be excited to see started in this area? And what do you think people should think about if they're considering working in this area?
So one thing is people sometimes ask me how to be a good EA journalist. And I think being a good journalist is a really important, like if you are coming to this with the ideological commitments, but journalism is very hard in like, it is the hours are demanding, the like word counts are demanding, you're doing a lot of interviews and stuff like that. So I think the big thing that makes me excited about someone going into journalism is if they are excited about journalism and they're somebody who would make a good journalist, then you can be an awesome EA journalist. And I think if someone is good at like the video side of stuff, I talk to people in that situation sometimes and I don't feel like I have a lot of specific advice for them, but that's certainly how a lot of people get their news and get their understanding of the world, and doing a good job of video journalism while I don't have the skill set and don't know how to evaluate it is definitely something that I'm excited about people doing. And then I'm excited about people doing like narrower translation work, like talking exclusively to people who do really just people who write really abstruse papers and understanding what's really important and maybe writing that up in a moderately less abstruse fashion so that then journalists can take it and run with it, I think is sort of underrated because often journalists aren't going to read the papers. And if you can turn the papers into something distillable for them, super valuable.
There are a million things where it's like, oh, that project would be so great and it should exist. And the reason it doesn't exist is that it takes a very specific person to do it well. And so I don't want to say, oh yeah, like definitely go for this. I think like if you think it is a good, there's a lot of things where like if you're a great fit, then like this would be super valuable. Like we don't have the alignment newsletter anymore. I think just like some kind of regular publication covering new advances in AI safety work with a somewhat like critical eye would be really great. Takes a very specific person to do that. I think that, like, certainly more policymaker-oriented journalism would be great. Takes a very specific person with a very specific Rolodex to do that. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see more just, like, beat reporting on things happening at AI labs. Takes a very specific person to do that. Kind of a lot of things in that vein.
In general, when it comes to career advice, often you're going to have your most impactful career if you find something where you are one of the best people in the world to be doing it. And so trying to, like, stretch yourself into something you're no good at is, like, very rarely a good idea. And playing to the stuff that you are really, really good at is, like I don't want to say, like, just go do whatever. Like I do think the impact matters a lot. But yeah, it's often a very specific, like, it's not that this project will happen regardless. It will only happen if you're the best person to do it, and you should figure out what project that is that you're the best person to do.
Definitely agree with all of those, especially the video stuff. I really wish we had more video content coming out of this ecosystem. The one thing I would add is, like, just more comms people in general. There are, like, hopelessly few in this ecosystem. And I would love more. And right now, CEA is hiring for a head of comms. OpenPhil is hiring for a head of comms. GiveWell is hiring for a head of comms. I would love for really brilliant, talented people to fill all of those roles. So if that is you, please apply for them. If you know people, please direct them to those jobs. Yeah, I'm just very cognizant that, like, especially on the AI front, Meta, IBM, Andreessen Horowitz are all lobbying hard right now, and they all have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comms people who've been doing this for years. We do not. It is going to be very difficult without us having more people doing this work.
Well, we're hitting time, and there are more great questions from the audience, so I just will encourage all of you to come to office hours after this, which will be in Junior Ballroom 4. And thank you so much to our panelists and our speakers for this conversation, and thank you all for coming.
Thank you. Thank you.